All right, people, we got a little bit of a reunion special going in here. Kristen, a.k.a. Miss Flamingo, is back, and so is Big J, a.k.a. Onyolo Movie Blogs. Good to have you guys both here in our official wrap-up of the winter and spring season before we officially kick off the summer season next week. Last year, I talked with Mac, kind of just giving like a preview of the summer and everything that was going on. This week, we got a pretty big, pretty important double release going on right now. We have the release of Zendaya's first ever leading role film. I didn't realize this up until she said this in my screening, which I'll get into that in a little bit. But I didn't realize this is the first movie that she's the lead in, which is kind of nuts when you think about just the overall star presence that she's had over the last couple of years. And then later on in the show, we're going to talk about Shogun, which is already the best show of this year and has just wrapped its 10-episode run this past week. Guys, you ready to kick this off?
Let's go.
Let's do it.
All right. All of this and more on today's episode of the Talkin' TV Podcast. Stay tuned. And I just wanted to say that the clinking of the spoon on the coffee cup was perfectly timed there. I know that wasn't intended at that time, but it was so perfectly timed, just like the cue hit to the intro song. It was perfect.
Cue to like slurping.
No, the slurping that wasn't important. No, just the perfect clink. It was like, the perfect cue that we needed. Guys, we're here. Yeah, guys. It's good. Guys, we're here to talk about Challengers, which is another movie similar to Dune 2 that was supposed to be released in, you know, the barn burner movie year that was 2023 and was unfortunately delayed as a result of the strike. So now we are finally getting to watch it in the year of our Lord 2024, which, as I have made apparent on the last couple of podcasts, know that I have not exactly been the biggest fan of movies this year. But there have been some good ones, for sure. There have been some ones that I have enjoyed. But I just feel like compared to last year, where it felt like everything that was coming out was like really awesome and really engaging. And it's like, oh man, the movies are back. We're finally getting into it. We have this awesome summer slate of movies. We have one of the best Oscar seasons of all time in recent memory this past year. And going into this year, obviously, yeah, the beginning of the year has been traditionally slow since post-COVID. But this is an interesting one because we're faced once again with, I feel like, a situation almost like a reverse of what happened when Promising Young Woman was originally supposed to be released in April of 2020 and then got delayed to December of 2020 as a result of COVID, where you have a movie that was supposed to be like a prime Oscar movie that then gets delayed and is released in the spring. So already in a weird way, it sticks out like a sore thumb. But also, in addition to that, you have it coming off of this last couple of slate of movies that really have not been the typical traditional, like I would say, early release of the year. You know, you've got some really, really excellent horror movies. You've got, you know, a new Guy Ritchie movie. You have Dev Patel making a really slick action movie that's pitched as like a John Wick thing, but really is something completely different. And then obviously the release of Alex Garland's Civil War, which is a pretty big event in and of itself. So it's been an interesting April, to say the least, you know, after Dune kind of demolished everything else that was in March. So I just wanted to get your thoughts on that in general. Like, what do you guys think of like Challenger's placement within the year so far? Really just the year of 2024 for movies so far. Onyolo, we haven't had you on in a minute, so I wanted your thoughts first.
Yeah, I for one, I am enjoying this year. Like, I loved Civil War. I think it's a really, really good movie. I think it's divisive because of the theme of the movie. So that will affect how certain people will see it. It also affect like how it was commercialized. So the trailers and stuff, I think people were expecting something else. But I really enjoyed. There's a lot of movies that I've seen this year that I liked, like Love Lies Bleeding, Dune, Monkey Man. There's a lot of great movies out there. And I think Challengers is one of the best. And to be honest, is one that the more I've been thinking about it, the more I've been enjoying it. There's a couple of things that when I saw it that kind of disturbed me, that kind of, I don't know, it felt out of place. And right now, those things kind of are my favorite parts of the movie. For example, the soundtrack. The soundtrack is something that felt really weird in some points. It didn't feel like it plays, especially if you look at previous movies of Luca. He always goes a different route with the music. And but the more it lands with me, the more I think about it, the more it kind of fits the narrative of the movie. So like I came out of it and I think I gave it a 4 stars. At the moment, I'm changing it maybe to 4.5 because there's a lot of the movie there that's been growing. So I think it's a movie that probably is going to be forgotten by the Oscars, because we all know that we have a very short attention span. Like, this is not going to be a movie that's probably going to stand out like Dune will because of the scale. But I think it's a great movie, and I think we need also to spread like these great movies during the year, because we all know we have parts of the year we have so many Oscar movies coming out, and then other times of the year there's nothing. So I think it's great that they're releasing this movie now, and I really, really enjoyed it.
I'm inclined to agree with a lot of those points. I'll get to those when I get into my thoughts of the film. So, Kristen, your thoughts so far in the year of 2024 for movies, and some of your initial thoughts going into Challengers?
I think I might have discussed it here on the channel in the past, but I really enjoyed Dune. I think that was like a great cinematic experience, and probably one I will never forget seeing it in a theater. I haven't seen like all the major ones. I haven't seen Monkey Man yet. I've seen, you know, Love Lies Bleeding, you know, some of the bigger ones, like, but I haven't seen everything. And I feel like so far what I've seen this year, everything I loved has been at Sundance and hasn't been released yet. So like a real pain, like Jesse Eisenberg's latest debut doesn't come out until October. But I think it's pretty interesting to say so far with the hype of Challengers. I wasn't crazy for it. Like, you know, I knew there was going to be like eyes for it because of Zendaya and Luca, because I like haven't been the craziest Luca Guadagnino fan, but I was like, all right, I'll give it a shot and see what happens. And yeah. We'll just go from there on my thoughts when we get back into that.
Yeah, definitely. No, I'm glad that you two both brought those points up, because like I said, I'm very inclined to agree on both those, because Anyol, you're correct. Literally almost had the exact same thought process where I was thinking a couple things during the movie and coming out, I'm like, I'm not sure if I really like this or not, but it's just sat with me this past week. It's been a week, actually, almost a week since I've seen it. Actually, I was able to see it early, and I'm going to get into that in a little bit. But Kristen, I also 100% agree, because Luca as a director has been very hit or miss for me, because I... Mm-hmm. Loved Suspiria and Bones and All. Both those movies made my top 10 of the years that they respectively came out. But Call Me By Your Name still sits weirdly with me, you know? And
it doesn't age now poorly.
Well, because of the Armie Hammer thing, it does not age well. But it definitely makes the peach seed a little weirder knowing that he was a cannibal. But
there's also another fruit that gets played out well. And
yeah. to say the least.
Challengers.
But, yeah, exactly. No, Luca, what is it with Luca and fruit? God damn. But Luca's an unconventional filmmaker, to say the least. But I like that, because like I said, when he hits it, like he makes some of my absolute favorite stuff for sure. And the thing about this movie is that I feel like it was like his take on like a sports drama, but he was like, okay, everybody knows about like the sports drama formula. I'm gonna like take a completely different approach to it. And I thought that a lot of it worked and was interesting, just in the sense of like providing a refreshing take on a genre that we're very familiar with. There were other, and especially when it comes to the casting and the dynamics of the three main characters, I thought that was probably the most interesting part. But there were other parts where I'm like, I don't know if this is working, specifically with the score. I think it's very interesting that you brought that up on YOLO, because the score for me, first of all, I had this really weird thing where I completely forgot that it was Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross. It was actually really funny. I was having this conversation with Dustin after I got out of the movie. And I was like, yeah, it was really weird. The score kept throwing me off. It felt too Reznor and Ross-y. And he's like, it was Reznor and Ross. I'm like, wait, really? And then I looked it up. Yeah. I'm like, oh, fuck. I'm like, I have not had a slip like that in a minute. So I completely forgot about that. And once I did, it kind of like reframed my thought about it. Because I'm like, oh, that makes sense. It wasn't somebody trying to do a take on them. It was them. And that means that they were doing like the score very
well. They did their job.
They literally did their job. I'm like, okay, that changes it up a bit. And like I said, I'll get into my thoughts on it. But so, Kristen, I told you, everybody that follows me on my social media accounts know this. I was able to get to an early screening of it. I actually saw this movie a week ago on Monday as a part of my A-list subscription. And I was sitting in the theater and there were cameras there. And I'm like, is this more than just an early screening? I'm like, was this something that I missed or whatnot? And then I heard some girls talking and being like, oh shit, she's here. And I'm like, who? Next thing you know, Zendaya herself walks into the theater with Mike Face, like right there. Turns out it was part of the promotional campaign. It's part of the press they were doing. I was like, wait, what? And I immediately got a picture and sent it to my brother just to piss him off because he's a massive Zendaya fan. Kristen, I'm pretty sure I sent it to you as well. And that was kind of where I realized that I'm like, oh, shit, this is Zendaya's first like leading role in a movie, because obviously she's been leading Euphoria for the last couple of years. But like, she's finally got to the point where like, oh, she can like lead movies now on her own. And I'll admit that like, I've had a back and forth.
Don't we consider Malcolm and Marie? She's being the lead also. Like,
I think this is like a theatrical release. I think Dom is kind of hinting at.
You know, I would say that. And also because Malcolm and Marie is like a 1-2 punch of like, it's her and John David Washington. But this one, it's like you. Right.
Duo leading.
Exactly. Okay. And
marketed as the star.
Right. As the star.
Josh and Mike. It's the Zendaya movie.
But if anything, I do also might be some misleading marketing, because I'm pretty sure. I mean, I think the screen time is pretty even between the three of them, but I would argue that story-wise, it's a little bit more about those two specifically than it is about her. But I'm going to get into that. I'm going to save my thoughts. Like I said, there's so much I want to talk about with this movie, because I'm like, finally, a movie that's actually worth having a discussion about. But so that happened, and it definitely has been interesting watching Zendaya's track record, because like, I'll admit this might be a me thing, but every time I see her in something, I always just think back to watching Shake It Up on Disney Channel, because like, that's just like my thing of like knowing her growing up. And it's so weird like seeing her and Bella being adults now and like going on their own paths. I say adults, they're literally my age, which is weird because I'm still don't technically consider myself an adult, but even though I am almost 30, which is weird, but so I guess that's kind of been like what's been so interesting about watching Zendaya these last couple of years is like watching her on Euphoria, on Spider-Man, in Dune, you know, Greatest Showman, Malcolm and Marie, all the different things that she's done recently. And it's always interesting to me where like it feels like they're trying to cast her in such these mature roles, and I don't necessarily know if they'll work for me, because I feel like it's because she still looks and comes off as so young that some of the more like mature roles, especially a role like this where she's supposed to be playing an older character, especially later on, there's almost like an uncanny valley thing going on for me, where it's like, I know that you're my age, but you come off as younger because of the nature of young stars, because it feels like, you know, like 20-something years ago, like 20-something-year-old stars looked like they were in their 30s and 40s. But now, 20-something-year-old stars look like they're still teenagers, you know? Like, you got a cast in Euphoria that's comprised of people who are all my age, 25 and older, but they all still look like they could easily pass as, like, late high school, early college. So that's just, like, this weird uncanny valley effect that's been, like, always throwing me off about Euphoria, you know? Especially now that, like, you know, you have Sydney Sweeney, who's really been making the rounds as well. And she's also like in this weird boat where she could play both like older or younger. So it's just this weird uncanny valley that I feel like can be attributed to a lot of the Gen Z stars that came through Euphoria, and kind of how that goes into this movie, right? Especially since this movie is presented non-linearly as well. You're cutting back and forth between these two different storylines of them in the future versus them like in the past. And also the fact that this movie starts in 2006. So that's another movie that's like already trying to turn the 2000s into a period piece similar to what Saltburn did, which is very, very strange for me personally, because that's all a time period that like I remember very vividly. So you have that going for it. And essentially what you have here is you have a movie that basically depicts a three-way between these three people that kind of then ends up evolving into essentially like a breakdown between the two guys. What are their names? Art and Pete Zweigoff, I think is Josh O'Connor's name.
Patrick, I think
thank
it was.
You. Yeah, Patrick. Art and Patrick, and kind of how they've got this like very, very close relationship. And kind of it's almost interesting how for a movie that's set about tennis, the tennis portion is really not a part of it. Like obviously, you know, the movie that I think of in closest comparison to that came out recently is King Richard, because that's another movie that revolves around tennis. But rather, that one is much more of like a straight biopic. This one is like the tennis stuff that's just like all in the background. The center focus of the movie is the relationship between these three and their individual relationships to the sport. And I think what's so fascinating as well is how it presents. It's like, oh my God, yes, we're finally getting the toxic sports drama back, in terms of like all of these people are so selfish and so self-involved that they are just, and that they are just willing to just let their obsession with the game overtake everything, you know, and kind of like how the back and forth, you know, like obviously the attraction between the two and you know, the back and forth where Mike Face's character Art is presented as like, you know, the much more like, you know, ne'er-do-well, like, you know, like good guy and such. Like he's just in it because he wants to do well and everything. And he genuinely cares about Zendaya versus Josh O'Connor's character, who's a lot more like the arrogant blowhard, but he's like the sexy male figure. So like she can't help but be attracted to him, you know? So like it's a classical dynamic that we've seen many, many times before. But what's also interesting is how the movie presents, because this is another thing that Luca loves playing with in his movies, is kind of the underlying homosexuality that's happening mm-hmm. between the two guys, where like he very much is playing around with the idea of like guy on guy relations, where you always have throughout the last like 20 years specifically in blockbusters and even before that, where you would have like male on male friendships that like would always possibly have this underlying homoeroticism to them. Top Gun just went all out with it, almost to the point where it's played to like farcical levels. But this movie I thought was really doing an interesting thing where it was presenting male friendship probably for the first time as being possibly a little bit more, like there's some very, mm-hmm. very blatant, like, there's some very, very blatant homosexual innuendo, not even innuendos, really. Especially, like, I thought probably the closest thing that I can remember seeing this in a movie was Cuarón's movie, Y Tu Mama Tambien, where that is another movie that ends in a three-way that kind of goes a little bit further between the two males, you know? So I thought that dynamic in and of itself was so, so interesting. And if not for the fact of, like, in a weird way, I feel like the tennis portion was what held me back, but that portion right there was just so engrossing and so invigorating just for me personally. What did you guys think about that portion?
I've kind of seen this as, like, a queer film more than anything now, and that's being kind of more presented if you look at the recent filmography that Luca has done, and especially how the characters play out, especially between like Josh and Mike.
Josh and Mike, yeah.
And like it feels like it's obvious, especially when Zendaya comes into that room for that like three-way like scene, you know?
Right.
Like there could be like hints, you know, where, you know, Mike and Josh were like maybe intimate. You can even see that again when they're in the cast.
There's a solid 2 minute, like almost a minute stretch where the two of them are just making out and making they don't out. Even realize and that then, it's them.
You know, and then you can see that like with the, I hate to say it, with the innuendos of like the food with the churros and the banana, like, you know, it's like, you know, Luke and his food, whatever. But like, you know, it's like they're like kind of like craving each other, but not like, you know, they're like, and like, not just like in the professional way, but like, you know, they want it sexually too, you know, and, you know, good on Luca if he wants to like present that in the film. But, you know, I mean, it's interesting, you know, Zendaya, I feel like is like the background actress, right? Like, you know, hey, you know,
exactly.
If you guys want to go at it, go at it.
And that's kind of what's so fascinating is the fact that I'm like, I was thinking this to myself, especially in the second half of the movie, right? When you're showing like kind of the back and forth of like how she ends up leaving Josh O'Connor's character and gets with Mike Face's character and how they end up getting married and have a kid. I'm just thinking to myself, I'm like, but Josh O'Connor is still in like kind of in the background, just kind of lurking. And you show that like he's kind of fallen on hard times in the years since. And I'm just wondering, I'm like, did Luca just kind of use Zendaya in order to market a queer romance movie between these two? Because that's what it felt like, kind of. It like now that I'm like kind of vocalizing it, now that I've had a chance to like actually think about it, I'm like, because if so, that's actually kind of brilliant if he did that. I'm almost kind of envious of the fact that he was able to do this. I love when filmmakers can do that, when they could like kind of like do some sneaky marketing, but in a way, like in order to present something that's like better than what the marketing was giving you. I don't know. Yola, what did you think about that?
Yeah, I didn't really saw it like that. I think this movie is not about tennis. This movie is not about just the queer side of it, because she's still like the object of the desire of the two. I think this movie is about people that are so obsessed with being the best in whatever it is. And I think that is it could be tennis, it could be anything else, but it's just how you're obsessed with something and like mm-hmm. you need other people that are as obsessed with you to drive you. And that is the story of the movie. As soon as there's not one of the parts involved, the other parts kind of start disconnecting. They start not being, and that's what I love on the end of the movie, that last set that they have, because he finally understands that that's the thing that they like. That's the fire that's under them is when they were together. And then that translates and gets mixed up with sexual feelings, because that is the thing. There were all these attractions and stuff, but what they were attracted to each other was like who they were also inside the tennis court. And that's why as soon as he's not like wanting to be the best, Zendaya is like, I'm gonna leave you, because that's what she needs. She needs that,
right?
And they need the three of them. So it's like this triangle. And I, it's funny that you talk about your mama también, because I was thinking about that, because
it
is kind of the same thing. This guy is kind of need her to be in the middle and kind of make them express. And I think that's the thing. It's not only sexual. Of course, like all the churros and bananas, of course.
Yeah, there's obviously, it was a little too obvious.
No, obviously is there. But then that's the thing. I think it's what I like about Luca, and I think he did that really well with Bones and All, is he layers movies on top of movies on top of movies. So it's not a love story. It's not a horror story. It's not a cannibal story. It's not... It keeps on layering. It's about like, and I think he did this year, as soon as you kind of think you understand what the movie is about. So when they have their first threesome and Zendaya kind of let you think, okay, this is where the movie is going. So they always been in love with each other. But then you see the obsession they have for Zendaya. And then Zendaya is kind of the prize. They are obsessed because the other one wants it. If the other one doesn't want it, I think that's the first time that he sees is when Zendaya walks for the first time on the pitch, and he sees the reaction of the other guy, and straight away, okay, I want her because you want her.
Right.
And I think that's the thing that I think it's really interesting, is that they are playing on all of themselves. They are like, they're just selfish people that will, and that's why when you said, oh, he was the nice guy, it wasn't the nice guy. It was trying to rob the...
Nobody is nice in this movie.
Saying, oh, he plays the nice guy.
Well, I guess just in terms of... Well, I guess just in terms of like the dynamics where they... For lack of a better word, you're correct. That was the wrong term. The alpha versus beta guy, I would say. You know, where it's like...
It's not even alpha versus beta. It's alpha versus alpha. Because I could see them both as alpha, like wolves.
And I guess
in the wild.
Right. And I guess kind of what's interesting as well is kind of watching, because I think it's very fascinating as well, watching that develop as they get older too, because obviously you see how they're in much different places, however many years it's been. What is it they say, it's been like what, like
it's
10
taken
years
over the course of like 13 years.
13 years, that's it. So it's like 13 years between like when we first meet these guys versus, you know, at the end, you know, and kind of where they've gone, where, you know, she's married to Mike Face. Mike Face has kind of like lost all of his love and enjoyment of the game, versus Josh O'Connor, like, he's still sort of invested, but like he's kind of let his, you know, his bad habits on the side overtake
each other. Because they don't have each other. And that's the thing. That's when they used to have that drive, was when one was better, the other one is trying to catch up. And when the other passes, the other one is trying to catch up.
Right.
If they're separate, they don't have that drive. And you see that with, that's very common with professional athletes. Like, for example, in football, that I like Ronaldo and Messi. They both already said, if I didn't have that other guy, I wouldn't have been as good as I am, because you kind of like drive. And I think that's what you see there. And she then is just like kind of fueling that, because she can't have her own career because of her injury.
Exactly.
So she's living through them. And I think that's what's interesting here, is that the movie is kind of like goes over. It's not a Brokeback Mountain that's clearly a story about the love of these two guys. It's like, they just kind of get it all mixed. There isn't like a sexuality there. There's a wanting to be with that person, just being near, because there's that energy. There's that thing that makes you feel alive. And then it just gets mixed up. And she uses that like very well. And I think she plays a really good role when she kind of laid back. Like, I think she's really powerful when we see that scene that everyone is like looking to a side and to another, seeing the game.
Right.
And she's just standing there still. It's very powerful.
That was a cool shot. That was a cool shot. Just like watching the audience like this way. And this way, and this way, and they were all in sync except for her, and she's just staring directly out.
It's like that happens a couple times, because she does it in the beginning of the film where she's like, you know, watching back and forth, and then there's like, and then it gets to like towards like the end, that's where that scene happens, where she's just like staring at the middle of the, you know, the net, and she's like, what's gonna happen here? They know something, they know they know that what I did, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what's also just freaking cool is that, but I think that with how the movie's structured, right? Because I feel like I cannot emphasize this enough, how the trailer pitches you almost, like the trailer includes like some bits, but I feel like because the trailer pitches you a much more conventional movie, I would say, versus what we actually get, which again, I love about that. But also the fact that like, I was so invested and compelled during the first half of this movie as things were building up that I completely forgot that she was gonna get injured. So when the injury happens, it's like that much more like guttural. Like I got like a visceral reaction when you hear that knee snap and I'm like, oh God.
They
kind
of, and they do show it in the film too.
Oh like no, they show it. They show it and it is grisly to watch. And yeah, no, I could agree more with all those points as well. Like that's honestly exactly what I was thinking, because you're right. All of those things of like in terms of like layering the toxicity and the obsession and like, you know, the drive that like these guys kind of need each other. And, you know, the comparison to real life athletes as well, the sense of where it's like, yeah, like we're only going to like the thing is that like humans need other humans to motivate each other. Yeah. And we're only going to do so well in a certain instance if we have somebody else motivating us. Mm-hmm. And I it's so fascinating as well with the nonlinear structure as well, where the movie starts and we're like 20 minutes like leading up to this final game between these two. And you're like, what's going on here? Because you're expecting it to like start at the beginning and then we get the first flashback, but it's like 20-30 minutes in, and like how it cuts back and forth, it's really, really awesome, because I feel like we haven't gotten a non-linear movie like this in quite a while, at least it feels like. And I think it really, really makes a difference. And especially like, I find it so interesting also how they use this, the same like Reznor and Ross, like that 80s techno beat, and like it'll come in and out and like it'll cut at random points. And at first I thought that the cutting was jarring. And to a point where it's like, I don't understand where this is going. But then near the end, I'm like, oh, no, I get it. It's supposed
it fits
to like
in with the editing and the jarringness of itself and the score. It just ultimately builds up more as the movie progresses.
Yes.
And that's what honestly truly stands out from making it like a cinematic experience of what it is. And like this thrilling aspect to it. There's no thrill at all. But like before they get like, you know, at least with the, you know, the tennis matches itself are like, you know, pretty thrilling. But it's that what, you know,
where he put me off sometimes was there were scenes that they were talking to each other and the music was so loud that you had to struggle to listen to what they were saying. But then the more I think about it, is it makes sense, because they weren't listening to each other. They were like kind of talking and the other one did not give a shit what he was saying.
Right.
So the more I think about it, is it was completely like on point.
Right.
And when you were talking about like this, not like linear movie, it's not, we don't have one in some time. What I found out the other day that I thought it was really funny is that the writer, his wife is
Celine Song, the director of Past Lives.
Yes. And that kind of like, it's the same, not the same kind of story, but the construction of it. It's very similar. Yeah.
Yes, it is.
And there was like a picture I saw. They were like, this film or this film? Yeah. And I thought, I was like, I didn't put it that until like yesterday when I found out. I was like, oh, that makes sense.
I did see that circulating around.
Because Mike Feist was talking about, because he was trying to get a role on Past Lives and then he didn't got it. And then when he was doing this movie, he was talking with the writer. And the writer would say, oh, my wife just released the movie and it was Past Lives. And it was like, oh my God, I was trying to get a role on that movie.
Yeah.
So it's funny how things connect there. But I think that non-linear, I think he did it a bit too much, because there were scenes that sometimes were just a tiny short scene and then it would go to another time. And I think that for me was one of the things that probably didn't let the movie breathe as he could.
Yes.
Because it was very quick, short things going back and forward. And I don't think it was necessary, because we kind of like got the story. But the movie in itself works really well with that. Like it's really well done. That's why I'm saying the more and more I'm thinking about it, the more I'm understanding that the flaws that I thought I had was probably something that was very well thought for him. And I'm not a Luca fan. Also, Call Me by Your Name, I'm also not a huge fan.
Yeah.
But Bones and Hall, yes. Suspiria is, I think it's, I'm such a big fan of the original.
Same.
I have heard this.
Yeah, it's so interesting. For me.
See, it's so interesting with Suspiria people, because I feel like you either get the people right who love the original so much, but and still acknowledge the new one is good, but they're like, it doesn't have anything of the original. But there are the few people, not many, but there are the few people who actually think that the remake is better. I have not seen the original, so I can't comment on that. But I just said that there are the few people, but like Suspiria just
the original
absolutely
is just amazing, honestly. Yeah, has gone to film school and has rewatched it multiple times. It like the Luca, film is
right.
Like,
well, they're different movies in terms of like themes that they're trying to cover is the thing, because the new one is very much a Cold War allegory versus the first one was not. So I think the first one was supposed to be like a World War II commentary, I think. Also, the new one didn't have Udo Kier just coming in to just deliver exposition for a certain section. So,
no, but yeah, like the first one is kind of like just every scene is a work of art, like cinematography, everything. And I think
the giallo like colors and everything.
Yeah. And this remake, it is okay. Yes. But I think that's the problem when sometimes we are very attached to the original. It's hard to see it with the clear mind.
No, that's fair. I'm definitely guilty of that as well. I want to talk about a couple more things with Challengers, though, before we move on to Shogun. I want to talk about just the cinematography, which is just mind-blowing, especially in the last shot when you're like, I don't know how they do this, but when they're almost like put like a GoPro on the back of the tennis ball and we're watching it as it's being punted back and forth between the two guys, I was literally like, wow, it's like literally like they're batting their like respective energy back and forth. And then at the end, when they like run at each other and they jump up and hug, like it's so awesome. Like, this is why I'm so happy that we have you on breaking this all down, because like that's the thesis statement of the movie, where it's like these two desperately needed each other, and that's why they were so miserable for so long, because they didn't have each other. And now that Zendaya's out, I mean, Zendaya literally calls it in the first scene. She's like, I was a homewrecker. That's literally what I was. But now that these two are like back together, whether it's the bromance, whether it's the romance, whatever it is, the
you can call it a romance. Right. That's how I saw it more.
Each other, and they're back together. And it's so funny because the first time I saw it, I was so confused, and it was like, what? And then of course the movie ended there, and I was like, what? But I was also like, there's something else here. There is something else here. I'm not going to just immediately write this off, but I need some time to think about it. And I'm glad I did, because honestly, like I said, throughout the course of this whole conversation, it has definitely been just like growing in estimation of my mind. And now I really think that this might be one of my more favorite movies of the year. Like I said, I still don't know if it's going to top Asphalt City or just the last 30 minutes of Immaculate, which might be the greatest last 30 minutes of any horror movie that I've ever seen in general. Mostly just because in terms of like mixing the self-aware humor with like the actual just jaw-dropping wackiness that we're watching on screen. But yeah, so before I get into Shogun, which has officially made its place as the number one show of the year, I already know that nothing is topping it. Your guys' final thoughts and star ratings for Challengers. Oh, don't worry. Like I said, I am usually very not wrong when it comes to my hyperboles. That is all I'm going to say. But Kristen, starting with you, your final thoughts and star ratings for Challengers.
When you were talking about the tennis ball with the GoPro back and forth, first I thought, why? But then I was like, I dig this, and how it builds up to
cool.
the end.
It was really cool.
Like, it's like a daring concept to do, but like, I appreciate for what it was. And I think summing my thoughts up, I think the more I sit with this movie, like I was like, I walked out of theater and I thought, okay, this was just good. I don't think I actually like loved it. And there's more like cinematic elements I enjoyed more from this film as I sat and thought about it, even though it's more about the story, but I think that's what makes Luca stands out as a filmmaker. Like, he can pick style, and that's what he does here with a lot of great style. The performances are really good. I think Mike Weiss might be my favorite, even though they all don't really outdo each other.
Right. I think for me, it might be Josh O'Connor. I love Faced in this too, but I think I like him a little bit more in West Side Story. O'Connor to me, just in terms of like a character who like is always seeming, and maybe this might be just be a little bit of bias of watching him on The Crown, but like is a guy who always just seems like he's got something else stewing under the surface. And you don't know what that is. Like, he clearly is a character who has like a lot of resentment, but but at the same time, like, he does also have that and like that cockiness, right? But he is like a caring individual, and it's so fascinating seeing the way that he plays that.
I also want to just jump in and say I love him in West Side Story, as Mike Feist in West Side Story as well. Not as bad as like I was gonna think it was gonna be, but do you want me to give a score something? Okay, so I'm going right now towards a like B plus. I enjoyed this, having this conversation more with you than like Love Lies Bleeding. I'm gonna say right now, I feel like there's more to digest with this film than Love Lies Bleeding.
Yes, I agree.
So yeah, so B plus, I enjoyed it. I think this is a better Luca film I've seen in a while. So like, you know, I wasn't a fan of Suspiria, you know, whatever about, you know, Bones and all. I was like, ugh. But you know, I enjoyed it. So
yeah, definitely. I like Suspiria and Bones and all a little bit more, but the more I think about this, yeah, I think this is going to climb. And especially if the rest of the year doesn't deliver in terms of content, this there might be a chance this might make top 10 of the year, but we shall see. Agnolo, your final thoughts and star ratings for Challengers.
Yeah, so like I said, I came out of the cinema. I gave it a 4 out of 5. Now I'm more towards 4.5 because that's the thing. I kind of had the same sense that he kind of went more for the style and went more for the cool aspects. But the more I think about it, the more I think there's a lot of layers into this story. I think it's about a lot more, not about the just the relationship and the sexual side, but it's more about us as people and what we need to drive us. And I think that's in everything, in our jobs, in like our friendships, everything. Like you always need someone to kind of pull you up to do better. Like and that works with everything, even with relationships. And I think in that movie, the more I think about it, and even those visual things of the ball, I think it's like I think it tries to make you feel how it is to be in the middle of these two guys, how it is to be pulled from one side to the other, the energy that's there. And that's kind of where Zendaya is in the middle. And I think that's the cool bit that I was saying when she's there in the middle, she's not even looking at it, is that she kind of is the puppet's like master. She knows how to pull the buttons. And there's one thing of the movie that for me is like that. I'm horrible in names. Josh
O'Connor.
Yeah. Josh O'Connor.
There's one part of the movie that for me says everything. That is when he's sleeping with Mike's wife, but when he says, "Look, you want me to lose the game? That's way worse of cheating." That just shows how these guys see the world. Like, because we see in the movie, he knows that his wife is sleeping around, because we know when he comes down and he sees her with him, and then he turns around and he's not there. He knows that she's sleeping around, but that's not the important thing. The important thing is that he still has her somehow. He still has a kid. He's still winning. And I think all that is very, very powerful. And I think I'm a big fan of Love Lies Bleeding. I think that's another movie that there's a lot of things under it. Like there's a lot of messages there. But I think this is up there. And if it's up there as one of my favorite of the year, for sure.
Yeah.
Like Civil War, Dune, Love Lies Bleeding, and this one are my favorite up to now. And I think it's a movie that is very clever also, like you said, using Zendaya as kind of the bait to get people in the cinema. And I love when people do that, when they like, one of my biggest examples is The Joker. I think like that's a great movie about mental health.
Yeah.
But you stick a thing there that is The Joker, and you trick a bunch of people that should watch that movie to watch it. If it was called some, because people say, oh, why didn't they call it something else? Why The Joker? Because you get people
it's
in
a marketing
the seat.
Tool.
Because if they called it Arthur Fleck, nobody would have watched it.
Yeah, if you call nobody it nobody would watch it. Nobody would watch it. And it's very important for people to watch it because of the mental issue they are discussing. So I think it's clever. You bring Zendaya in, you make it feel like it's going to be like this threesomes and like she's going to be there. And it's not that. And I think that's really, really like, we need more movies like that.
I agree. I'm tempted to agree. Like I said, I will say this about all the films. I may not have loved every film that I've seen so far in the first 4 months this year, but I can't say that the ones that have been interesting have not been interesting, which I always do give credit for that when that is the case, because we just don't get a lot of interesting movies anymore as much, I would say. My final thoughts and star ratings. Look,
so you say Madam Web is interesting.
Listen,
then.
I will never ever be anywhere near that movie. Like watching the trailers was painful enough. You know, there was a reason why I scrapped that whole podcast just so we could talk about all the Marvel updates. There was a reason for that. Oh man, but Max still killed it in that sense with calling it, what do you call it, like the anti-movie of our time or something like that.
Yeah.
One of the all-time great reviews. Chris, you
got to give said that?
Yes, yes, he did. One of the all-time.
That's pretty fair. We talked about that movie on our show, too.
That set the template, I feel like, for podcast this year. I'm like, shit, I don't know if we're going to top that.
Damn. If any podcast is talking about Madam Web, it's definitely a listen, because everybody just wants to dogpile
off that movie. And, like, Max set that off so hard, and then Agnolo and Dontre just carried that for the rest of it. I'm like, I don't even need to talk about this movie. This is great. Oh man, yeah. So my final thoughts and star ratings on Challengers. This is a movie that I went in expecting one thing and got something totally different. And sometimes that doesn't work for me in this instance. I thought it didn't, but in hindsight, it really did. So I am, yeah. This movie is definitely one that I am gonna watch again. As I've thought about it, the more and more, it's really grown on me in terms of just having these really interesting themes, these fascinating characters, these fascinating performances. Some absolutely great, great filmmaking. Just indeed, I think this is another win from Luca. I give this one. I boost this one up to a 4. Possibly might boost it up to a 4.5 out of 5 later on. Now, I just have to give a quick PSA. For you two, that I might get a little loud in this next section, louder than I normally do. So I just wanted to, I just wanted to make that perfectly clear, which is, man,
share your passion, Dom. That's your thing.
Like, listen, 2023 was a rough year for me TV wise because I had to say goodbye to Succession, to Barry, to Ted Lasso, to Reservation Dogs, to Sex Education, to Physical. There's a bunch of other shows that ended last year that I'm already forgetting, but like I have had to say goodbye to so many shows recently, and the monoculture, I get it, is gone. Game of Thrones last season killed the monoculture. I understand, but Jesus Christ, you people need to watch Shogun. Oh my God. Like I said when it came out in March that Dune 2 was going to wipe every other movie this year off the board, and so far I have not been proven wrong. And I can say that now with Shogun because, like, I mean, how many other shows do we get that can basically give us the equivalent of all the first 7 seasons of Game of Thrones in 10 episodes? But it's set in Japan, and it's so, like, rooted in Japanese culture, but, like, ancient feudal Japanese culture, which feels so alien, but at the same time is made to feel so presentable here. It has some of the best performances of the year. It has some of the most like interesting character dynamics and political machinations that I've seen really in anything since Game of Thrones. The performances all around are phenomenal. Hiroyuki Sanada, who has been kind of like well known popping up and stuff for the last couple of years. He was in John Wick 4 last year and Bullet Train the year before that, is one of the best lead performances and gives such a powerhouse performance as this warlord who is only seeking to like essentially like use political machinations to usher in peace, which you almost never hear of. Cosmo Jarvis, who made a name for himself in the last couple seasons of Peaky Blinders, gives one of the most like interesting performances for his accent alone, which is just phenomenal. Tadanobu Asano, who is probably better well known as Puppy, who is better well known as what the dog doing, who is better well known as Raiden in the Mortal Kombat movies, is phenomenal as this character who like kind of comes off as like this shifty, like treacherous character, but is also really doing what he can in order to attempt to make peace. It's like I don't think I've ever seen a situation like this before where you have all these different machinations, all these different political factions going on because of this time in Japan, right? It's right after the fall of this massive shogunate that was responsible for this massive war going on, but there's still all these different remnants left over from his rule that are causing all of these different factions to line up against each other. You've also got the emerging presence of Christianity in Japan as well. You've got, and then, like I said, you have Cosmo Jarvis, this is character Blackthorn, who is the leader of this ship from England that crashes, what's it called, that gets shipwrecked and marooned in Japan. And it's like he's finding himself immersed in this completely alien culture. But but of course, they're subverting the white savior tropes as well. And I haven't even started talking about Anna Sawai's character, Anna Sawai as Mariko, which might be one of the best performances of the year, where you have a character that is essentially trying to toe this balancing act between you know, attempting to move on past the shame of what her family has done in the past, while also still attempting to, embody Japanese culture the best, because as we know, Japanese culture, you know, women are expected to very much know their place in that sense. But like the way that she's able to like kind of toe this line and like have a toe in all fields, like, you know, maintain this political strategy, also her relationship to kind of the big bad of the show, which is revealed this character Lady Ochiba, who was revealed to kind of be to have this the behind the scenes like puppet master pulling the strings, because she has this beef against Torunaga, Hiroyuki Sanada's character, for murdering her father, for murdering her husband, who was the previous daimyo. It's just I could go on for a while about the show, but I guess kind of why I'm so passionate about this show as well is because I feel like the show accomplishes what Chernobyl did back in 2019, which is where essentially we're seeing what the new version of TV is, right? Because Anil, you and I were talking about this on the pre-stream before we actually got on, right? TV has shifted a lot, obviously, in the traditional fare, right? Where TV used to go on forever, you know, and obviously it shrunk, and the runs have become more and more limited, you know, went from like however many seasons they could get to be in like 10 seasons, to be in 6 seasons, to now, you know, really the norm is like, we're lucky if a show can get to like 3 or 4 seasons. But I feel like even more so than that, the norm has now become essentially to do 8 to 10 episode movies, essentially, because this to me was not a TV show. This was not a miniseries. This was a movie told across 10 episodes. And I think that probably since Chernobyl, this is one of the best instances of that. I think 2019 was a really interesting instance because there were 3 separate instances of you seeing this happen. You saw this happen with Chernobyl. You saw this happen with When They See Us. And to a certain extent, there were still elements of it, but to a certain extent, you could make the argument that you also saw this happen with Watchmen, but less so. That one also still had a lot of TV elements in it as well. But this one, I could definitely say, like, this is a movie told across 10 episodes. And it's just, it is so cinematic, like, unbelievably. Like, the cinematography, the score, just the look and feel of Japan at that time, it feels something that is, like, and like, obviously, you know, the presence of Japanese culture and how it's been, obviously, you know, slowly making its way into the U.S. the last couple of years, you know, with, you know, like Bullet Train, like last year with the 1-2 punch of Boy and the Heron and Godzilla Minus One, you know, and kind of just how it's been making more, just much more of an impact. I think this is kind of like, in a strange way, like the apex of it. And I'm really interested to see where it goes on further from here. But yeah, just absolute apex show. Loved it. Could not hype it up more. Could not give more praise to it than if I tried. It's the best show of the year. Like I said, Dune 2 is the best movie of the year, and this is the best show of the year. I will be. There are some shows that have come close. I really like Three Body Problem. I've been a big fan of the animated stuff, you know, since Invincible wrapped its run back in March. I think that obviously The Boys and House of the Dragon, and when they come out later on in the year, Severance and Arcane will give this a run for its money, as well as The Bear season 3. But I really personally, for me, this
you have
is this.
To see. You have to see Baby Reindeer
and Baby Reindeer. I just watched that. I am going to watch that.
Baby Reindeer is really good.
I've heard that.
It's fascinating. It's a really good watch.
But do you know the guy that is the main actor? Is the guy that he really happened to him? That's the guy that's crazy. Yeah.
That's still so crazy. Sorry. That's still so absolutely insane that's the case. But
yeah, my problem with the TV shows is, like you said, like, I don't know who's the guy behind Shogun, but if it's someone that doesn't have a lot of power, they'll probably like make him do another season if this is successful.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Like Watchmen, the only reason that it didn't happen a second season is because
of David Lindelof.
Yeah, he can do whatever he wants. If he says, I'm doing one, that's it. He can do and move on to another thing. But then, like these guys, for example, like even Squid Games, it was supposed to be one
but season.
It's a guy that like, he's been trying to make it for ages. And it's like, okay, do another season. He's going to do it. So I don't know, like there's a lot of shows that they say, oh, it's only going to be one season. Then it's very successful.
And they tease you with another. Yeah,
I hear what you're saying. And I do absolutely hear it. But there's a couple of caveats to that. One, I think the Netflix of it all has to be taken into consideration, because Netflix and the way that they make and market their content is so different from other streaming services. Like when you have Netflix, like a hit, when it's like a viral massive hit like that, it's like the equivalent of a movie making $1 billion essentially in internet terms. With other shows on other streaming services, like especially like when you notice like the critical acclaim, I think it's a little bit different. And like the show, and especially when you have it considering that it's on a network like FX via Hulu, you have a little bit more of that. They are much more so, I feel like, about pushing their creative shows as opposed to making the shows run as long as humanly possible. John Landgraf has been, the CEO, has been very, very open about that. And like I said, the fact that the showrunners have said in multiple instances and multiple times, okay, we adapted the entire book. We don't have a script for season 2. We don't have an idea for season 2. We don't want to do a season 2. We don't even see where this could go with a season 2, because the way that this wraps up in this final episode, there's really not a whole lot that they can do because it's pretty open and shut case. I mean, obviously,
I get what you're saying, but that never stopped anyone.
That like, is true.
All
that
of the
true.
Problems you are saying never stopped anyone.
So and I guess
Hulu, and Hulu belongs to Disney.
That is true. Yeah. But I guess kind of the end all be all statement that I'm trying to get at is only time will tell. But I'm pretty confident this is going to be a one and done. I'm pretty confident, but we shall see. I could be wrong. So, Kristen, have you gotten to watch any of Shogun yet or not yet?
Not yet. My husband and I want to watch it though. We're kind of like been on the anime train lately. So we just started Spy Fam. So,
Finally, it's got you. It's got
you. But I did start. The only thing is, cause I want to watch it with him. So I don't want to watch Shogun without him. So I just started, Under the Bridge.
Oh,
and
how
is
that?
That is really, really good.
Okay,
like, I think that might be my favorite show so far this year. There's only 3 episodes, and I'm like digging everything. It's
It's only a 3-episode miniseries.
No. There's only 3 episodes that have been released.
Oh, okay. It's okay.
And I'm just like, okay, you know, I love a good murder mystery, and you know, I'm just like invested.
Yeah, hopefully it could be a better murder mystery than that dog shit last season of True Detective. And also,
it's got Lily Gladstone and Riley Keoghan in it, so you can't go wrong with it.
True.
So.
Not to mention that like it's that time of the year. It's April going into May. They're trying to get out all these shows before the Emmy season wraps, and they start nominating Emmys. So that makes sense. But I had to give a shout out to Shogun because it's the best thing that I've seen so far this year TV wise. Like from the moment the first episode aired, I'm like, oh, we're in for something special here, and I'm glad to say that I have not been let down by that. Like I said, performances, cinematography, score, the look, the feel, it's a 5 out of 5 across all categories.
From what I see though, there's no doubt in my mind it's gonna be nominated for like Emmys.
Oh, it's gonna be nominated and it's gonna win.
It's gonna sweep.
It's gonna win.
I see, it's gonna be like, you know, this is like the show to watch, you know.
Yeah,
even for people who haven't seen it, like, you know, like Yolo and I, we haven't watched it yet, so I'm excited to watch it.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one, to say the least. I'm very excited. Like I said, now I have to put Baby Reindeer and and Under the Bridge on my list now as well of shows that I have to hit. I've just been, you know what the problem is too? Like, because like the, because there haven't been as many new shows to watch, I've just been watching a lot of old TV as well. I finished the first season of Peaky Blinders back in March, and I've just been, I've recently got back into Hannibal. And I have been obsessed with Hannibal. It is so good. I'm like, Mads Mikkelsen is Hannibal Lecter. And like, why did I not watch the show when it initially came out? But I digress. So yeah, Shogun, I'm giving it 5 stars. Absolutely. Could not recommend this more. And Luke hopping in at the last minute. It's not quite the Fall Guy though. what's it called? But you know, we'll cover that next week. Luke, we'll be hitting that next week. Save your thoughts for that then. And then he also had to shout out Chris in those Cosmere leather bounds though. Talking about the book behind you, I'm guessing.
That goes out to my husband.
Yeah. I still have to get into the Cosmere section. I'm still only in the Mistborn phase as well of my Brandon Sanderson reading, but I will get there once school is over. So with that being said, people, that is it. Our spring season has officially wrapped. Next season, we will be kicking off our summer slate. It is going to be double feature summer. We're doing next week. We're kicking it off with The Fall Guy and I Saw the TV Glow. And then for the rest of the summer slate, just so I can give you guys a quick preview, the week after that, we have Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Then we have Imaginary Friends and Back to Black. Then we wrap up May with Furiosa. Then we got a little bit of a break that last weekend of May leading to the first weekend of June. Then that second weekend of June, we've got a big triple hitter feature. We have Hitman, we have Bad Boys, Ride or Die, and we have, what's it called? Let me check my slate. I believe we have it is The Watcher from Ishana Night Shyamalan, M. Night Shyamalan's daughter. That is the second weekend. I'm wrong. That's the following weekend with Inside Out 2 and the remake of The Crow. Then the following weekend is Inside Out 2 and then The Watchers. Then the weekend after that is The Bike Riders and Kinds of Kindness. And then we wrap up June with A Quiet Place Day 1 and the first chapter of Kevin Costner's Horizon Saga. That's going to be interesting. Then we kick off July, 4th of July weekend with Beverly Hills Cop 4 and Maxine. Then we have Long Legs from Oz Perkins. Then Twisters. Then we wrap up July with Deadpool and Wolverine. And then August, we've got Trap, M. Night Shyamalan's new movie. We have Cuckoo and the Borderlands movie in the same weekend. And then my birthday weekend, we have Alien Romulus, as well as Horizon Chapter 2. And then we wrap up the summer with Blink Twice, which is Zoe Kravitz's directorial debut. So all of that will be a look forward to for the summer. It's going to be an interesting summer slate, to say the least. Like I said, 2024 after this spring is shaping up to be a pretty interesting year. But like I said, stay tuned because we're always going to be making new content. We're also going to be doing recap series for both The Boys and House of the Dragon when those return. I'm currently working on my top 25 movies turning 25, and it's all queuing up for once we hit the fall when Luke and I start releasing our episodes of Talking Lost, which we will start recording over the summer. It's going to be a big year for content, people, to say the least. So if you are not going to want to miss any of this stuff coming out. Kristen Agnolo, thank you so much for coming on. You two will be on again in the near future. Kristen, starting with you, where can the good people follow you on the interwebs?
The good people can follow me at Miss Filmingo on Instagram and TikTok. I am just everywhere else, so just hit me up on Instagram. You can find me there. And then I'm the co-host of the M&K Productions podcast with my best friend, Mac. So shout out to Mac. I'm sure we'll be on here to talk the Fall Guys next week. So, yeah. But thanks for always having me. It's always fun to come on here.
Come on. You guys know that you're basically family at this point. And Joe Agnolo. Oh, man, it's so rare. I feel like that we get to have you on the show now. But, man, hopefully we'll be you're going to be on the show a lot more over the summer. Once again, you always bring the wisdom. You always bring the different perspectives that some of us younger folks may not necessarily think of. Where can the good people follow you on the interwebs?
Yeah, so you can find us on Instagram and TikTok and YOLO Movies blog. And just hopefully more year. Every time you invite us, we'll come.
Yes, absolutely. Every time. Like I said, there will be many more invitations, to say the least. And of course, everybody can follow me with everything going on at Movie Nerd Reviews across all platforms, at the official Talkin' TV podcast across all platforms. Subscribers, if you're watching us on YouTube, follow us on Twitch. This episode will be available on Spotify and Apple Podcasts as of tomorrow. And as always, people, 12 seasons in a short film, and watch more fucking movies. We'll see you guys next week for The Fall Guy.